Audio version of Michael Leitman's blog. February 18, 2021. Envy is the engine of development. Envy is a very powerful and important tool in spiritual advancement. It is obvious that in our world it is impossible to advance without envy. A person looks at others and envies not only people, but even animals. One wants to fly like a bird and swim like a fish in the sea. We must first see an example from the outside, and then our egoism will also light up to acquire the same abilities. The more developed the egoism is in a person or in a nation, the more it is envious and capable of development. Envy is a special quality that forces us to desire not what we really lack, but what we see in others. It helps us imagine how nice it would be if we got the same thing that our neighbor has. I'm jealous of what the other person has, and I start to miss it too. And so there is no advancement without envy. It is very important to use envy now before the big congress, because in order to increase our desire, to ignite the desire to achieve a high goal, we need to adopt each other's desires and combine them together. This requires envy, which is peculiar only to man. Animals are almost not familiar with envy, and even more so with plants or inanimate nature. Only at a certain stage of development does the desire to enjoy begin to feel what the neighbor has. And even if I personally have no need to have the same thing that the other has, if I see how he enjoys, my egoism also lights up to get it and enjoy it. Usually, the higher the development, the greater the ability to envy, which helps to faster development. Therefore, if we see that we do not have enough desire to advance to the goal of creation and realize our purpose in life, to correct our soul, then we need to turn to society. As it is said, they helped everyone his friend. Everyone can show others an example to be envied and increase one's limited desire. Envy in Kabbalah is a good quality, not an evil one. Therefore, everyone should give others a reason for envy, due to which the desire to enjoy will grow and allow us to achieve a high goal faster. Being jealous of my friend, I do not want to belittle him in any way so that he also would not have what I do not have. I am happy to adopt from him additional desires and actions. Envy used to lead to wars. But we need to learn how to use envy properly so that instead of fighting with each other, we can fight to rise above envy and move toward a common goal. From the first part of the Daily Kabbalah lesson, February 15, 2021, Envy. My new article on LinkedIn: Envy, when the engine of growth becomes the agent of destruction. When we are little, we grow by looking at others and imitating them. We don't want to harm them or deny their desirable traits or possessions, but rather to have what they have and to do what they do. This is healthy envy. It develops us, and drives us, forward. When we begin to want to have more than others, control others, or deny others what they have, this is when envy, the engine of growth, becomes the agent of destruction. Envy that is attached to a desire to destroy others is the egoism that is destroying us. Throughout history, countries have been competing with each other, driven by this ruinous force, and have wrought pain and anguish on each other out of their desire to be at the top of the world. We cannot uproot this force, it is inherent in our nature. What we can and should do is harness it the same way children use it to develop themselves. In order to learn how to use it constructively, we first have to realize that when we may more harm others, we are harming ourselves. We have to come to feel the truth of our interconnectedness, that we are all parts of a single system, a mechanism whose units are perfectly intertwined and balanced. It is like a complicated machine with billions of pieces, all necessary for the smooth operation of the machine. When you maim one unit, you have maimed the entire machine, of which you yourself are a part. Think of the human body. There are approximately 10 trillion cells in the human body. These are organized into numerous tissues, organs, and organ systems. Can you imagine what would happen if these tissues and organs turned against each other? This is exactly what we have been doing to each other every day for thousands of years. Easy to wonder that the world we live in can barely sustain us? My teacher's father, the great 20th century Kabbalist Balha Sulam, wrote extensively about the need to send people back to school and re-educate them. He meant that we should learn how to work with our egos. At the moment, we use the knowledge that we have to harm others, and in so doing, we harm ourselves. The coronavirus is just the first example of the type of global blows that will become increasingly frequent until we realize that we cannot harm others since it hurts us, too. Our ruinous envy of our neighbors on the personal, social, and international levels is destroying us. We must reeducate ourselves and cater to our envy only when it motivates us to grow, but not at the expense of others. This is what Balha Sulam meant when he wrote that we must go back to school. Education seems like a slow and gradual process, but there are shortcuts we can take. Because we're all connected, parts of one machine, when we contemplate a notion, others begin to contemplate it, too, even if they don't hear it from us. When we convey that thought to others, we convey it far beyond the people we communicate with, as the idea begins to spread throughout the human web, throughout the system. Merely thinking about our interdependence and the need to stop our ruinous envy sends ripples through the system that generate that thought in others, too. All of a sudden, people will start talking about it, as if it is their own idea. They won't know it, but it will have come from you. When we learn how to work with envy constructively, then our path to success is paved. My new article on LinkedIn: The Healing Force in Physicians' Hands. When I see the tremendous pressure that medical teams are under in the COVID-19 fight, I am filled with great sympathy. I know the world of physicians closely. My parents were doctors, and I too started my studies in medicine but very quickly left because I realized it was not for me. Instead, I switched to medical biocybernetics, my first profession. The fate of every patient, every health team, and all of mankind depends on the revelation of the healing force of unity between us. So who am I to turn and speak to doctors and nurses when they need to deal with decisions that may make the difference between life and death on a daily basis? They know how to cooperate and work together as knowledgeable experts treating their patients. However, too often now, they find themselves helpless to deal with the situations they face. The year of the coronavirus has put extreme pressure on the healthcare system. Morbidity is rampant, mutations erupt at an alarming rate, and the vaccination campaign is at its peak. In this demanding scenario, the medical teams are on the front lines of the battle. They have had to adapt to rapidly changing conditions and new challenges as they strive to save human lives, all of this while covered head to toe in cumbersome, hot, protective suits and learning to read facial expressions through masks. The circumstances are unparalleled. In this unprecedented situation, there is one recommendation for overwhelmed medical teams: connect between yourselves more. Not just in a professional connection or a temporary closeness forced by the plague, but with an earnest and deep connection. This will produce great positive forces. Medical professionals will receive the much-needed fuel that will motivate them to work harder in times of fatigue and to rise to the task in spite of worsening situations. When I speak of connection, I am not referring to ordinary mechanical cooperation. I speak of a continuous warm connection characterized by interdependence, support, and mutual recognition at work. Certainly, these emotional efforts to connect require a great deal of inner energy because they demand care and consideration for others, which are unnatural for the human ego. But it is precisely these efforts that generate the strength and vigor that will reduce stress and bring the team to a common sensation of feeling each other without words, and the ability to identify together their next joint action. A subtle internal tendency to connect will turn the team into an integrated unit with a spirit of one for all and all for one. Each member will seek to complete the other, to fill any possible void or concern, to be a guarantor for the other, and to open up their heart. This sensation of perfect collaboration will crystallize their desires into one finely focused will aimed toward an indivisible unity that embraces every teammate. This deep connection will recharge team energy and draw special power to the medical staff from the force of nature, a power which is available when people unite. This is the force that fills the entire universe. It will not only strengthen the team, but will also help patients heal physically and emotionally. Both the healers and the healed will experience great benefit and satisfaction. And even when conflicts, disputes, and outbursts erupt in their relationships, and such situations are expected and worthwhile, they are nothing more than a call to gather and talk for a few minutes, open a fresh page, and reconnect to their common goal to warm their hearts. Such moments are the time for reminding each other that everything that happens comes from a supreme source in order to reveal the sickness of hatred and ruthless competition between us, that needs curing. Thus, every predicament and ailment should be seen as an opportunity for connection, a place to overcome our difficulties in order to acquire greater strength together. The fate of every patient, every health team, and all of mankind depends on the revelation of the healing force of unity between us. My new article on LinkedIn Medicine as Nature Would Have It. A few days ago, an Israeli doctor wrote that after more than 20 years of practicing medicine, he finds himself too many times having to say he doesn't know. He says COVID has upended everything in his profession, and he and many of his colleagues find themselves clueless all too often. If we want to become healthy, we must heal our social attitude. This will heal our society, which, in turn, will heal our bodies, and the world will be a healthy, happy place to live in. It seems as though reality is catching up with us, in every aspect of our lives. Everything whether put on a pedestal is crumbling, including, if not first and foremost, modern medicine. Whether turned being healthy into a business, and in business, money matters, and not people. Worse yet, in the past year, the struggle against COVID-19 has become a political power struggle, and decisions that cost lives and livelihoods of millions cater to party interests rather than to the interest of the people. As with everything else, COVID has exposed our nature, and it is not pretty. We have forgotten that in the end, the human body is that of an animal. Just as animals get their healing from nature, so could we, if we only stayed attentive to our nature. Instead of an attitude of cutting open, replacing, and stitching back, we could have known how to maintain our health and how to heal ourselves easily and quickly when we need it. But being healthy isn't lucrative, so we are taught to stop listening to ourselves and we become ill. I am not advocating veganism, I am simply pointing out that we have become deaf to the natural needs of our body, which, by the way, are very few and cost almost nothing. If we were more attentive, we would know what plants are good for what problem, and how to keep ourselves more generally healthy. We are living within nature, nature has engendered us, sustains us, yet when it comes to our health, we have no clue how to use it to maintain or regain our health. It is as if we've cut off the umbilical cord that nourished us, and now we're trying to survive disconnected from our nurturing mother. Sadly, where our disconnection is most apparent is with each other. We have not only disconnected from nature, we have, first and foremost, disconnected from each other. We are suffering from moral narcissism, thinking about how our actions make us feel about ourselves rather about their consequences for others. Just as we treat every organ in our body as though it is a standalone system, we treat ourselves as standalone individuals, regardless of the society we live in. The same approach that sickens our society sickens our bodies. We are ill from within and from without. So reconnecting to nature means reconnecting to everything and everyone, feeling that we are all parts of one system, which tends to all its parts, including us. But it does so only if we, too, tend to it. If we want to become healthy, we must heal our social attitude. This will heal our society, which, in turn, will heal our bodies, and the world will be a healthy, happy place to live in. My new article on LinkedIn shaming offenders achieves the opposite result. Recently, there has been an initiative to show the names and faces of murderers and sex offenders on billboards in Israel in order to shame them. Raising awareness to crime is great, but giving notoriety to criminals will achieve the exact opposite of the intended goal. It will make them proud of what they did and will inspire other potential offenders to act. Because our society is growing increasingly narcissistic, and narcissism, as Time magazine correctly observed, is a leading cause of such actions, we must deal with the narcissism in society, if we are to prevent future perpetrators from acting. To do that, we must foster social solidarity. Steve Chapman of the Chicago Tribune wrote in a piece titled "Deprive Mass Murderers of the Fame They Seek," that the more their names are known, the more likely they are to inspire imitators pursuing similar recognition. A 26-year-old man who killed 9 people on a college campus in Oregon in 2015 had previously written of another killer, a man who was known by no one, is now known by everyone. Seems the more people you kill, the more you're in the limelight. Time magazine also wrote about the problem with giving notoriety to criminals, focusing on how criminals use social media to gain fame by hurting other people. In a piece titled "Why Facebook Live Tempts Fame-Seeking Criminals," Adam Lankford wrote, "According to Pew Research Center surveys, 51% of Americans aged 18 to 25 say that to be famous is one of their generation's most important goals in life. Similarly, as part of their professional ambitions, many adults now compete to grow their Twitter base and promote themselves online. Unfortunately, this widespread desire for fame has been accompanied by an increased blurring of the distinction between fame and infamy. Additionally, and this is very important," Lankford adds, "that given this social context, it is not surprising that some people who cannot get fame legally will commit crimes to get fame instead. This risk is especially high for people with narcissistic tendencies, because they are so desperate for attention, and they lack empathy for those they have to trample upon to reach their goals." Dr. Scott Baum referred to such people in a Psychology Today article as celebrity monsters, and added that some serial killers actually seek out public notoriety and actively engage in the creation of their public image. Clearly, giving offenders the fame they seek will not shame them. On the contrary, it will make them proud and encourage other offenders to act, and act more boldly than they would have had they not seen the fame that other offenders receive. Instead of fame, we must deal with the problem on a more systemic level. Because our society is growing increasingly narcissistic, and narcissism, as Time magazine correctly observed, is a leading cause of such actions, we must deal with the narcissism in society, if we are to prevent future perpetrators from acting. To do that, we must foster social solidarity. As Lankford noted, people with narcissistic tendencies, which is most everyone today, are desperate for attention, and lack empathy for those they have to trample upon to reach their goals. In a society where there is solidarity, everyone receives the attention they need. The members of such a society feel that they are dependent on each other, and therefore cultivate warm relations. The mutual dependence engenders group awareness, where people cater to the needs of their group no less than they cater to their own needs. As a result, they will be careful not to trample on others, since it would pain them as if they harmed themselves. Once people develop group awareness, it becomes easier for them to absorb the idea that their group depends on other groups just as they are dependent on their own group. That would expand their social awareness and broaden their range of social solidarity beyond their immediate group and into the community, or school, or city. Gradually, the circle of awareness will grow until it encompasses the entire country, and eventually, contingent upon the readiness of other countries, it will encompass the entire world. Crime doesn't happen because people feel no shame, it happens because people feel no affinity. Nurture affinity, and you have eliminated crime. This should be our main goal in all our education systems the world over. If we achieve this, we will have a safer present and a happy future. If we do not do this, no shaming, warnings, or technological gadgets to ward off criminals will help. Elon Musk's Mars program. Comment: Elon Musk, the founder of SpaceX, Tesla, and now the richest person in the world, announces plans to build an autonomous city on Mars, which can survive independently of the Earth. He does not intend to abide the Earth's laws outside of Earth, but instead wants to rely on the principles of self-administration established on the basis of goodwill. By 2050, he wants to send about 1 million people to Mars and build a city there. My response: what for? Even if people live well there, in peace and friendship with each other, they still will be dying, because this is the nature of biological organisms. And then what? So they will live on Mars. What is the goal? Is it to demonstrate that people in spacesuits can live or bury themselves somewhere underground and live in their own artificial conditions? Comment: I understand his hope is to build such a city of the future or a country of the future on Mars. My response: for this, you need to change people. Comment: maybe he thinks that we are going to make a complete mess of the Earth by 2050. My response: that's for sure. Comment: we will have such wars here. My response: this will happen much earlier. Comment: everyone will dream of escaping this planet somewhere to somewhere else because they will understand that it is impossible to survive on this planet, that is, when it will be just hell here. My response: if there is hell here, then we will build the same hell elsewhere. Question: so we are not going anywhere from this planet? Answer: nowhere. We will have to make the right, good life on this planet. There is no place for us, other than Earth. We may with great difficulties reach other planets, but we won't be able to live there. They are not, according to thousands of parameters, adapted for people. People also will not be able to adapt to them. This is the first thing. And the second thing is, this is not the mission of man to preserve his animalistic essence. He must rise above it, so that he would be able to fly in his spirit from star to star. Question: does it mean that right now I can move to another star? Answer: of course. Question: can I be on Mars right now? Answer: you do not need space suits, you do not need an atmosphere, you do not need anything. You only need the correct desires, when you do not interfere with any systems, but you can be included in them in such a way that you do not bring any interference into them. Question: what is interference? My destructive thoughts. Answer: of course, they are egoistic. Question: is this why this place won't let me in? Because I have destructive thoughts? Answer: yes. Question: what does it mean that we are so connected to the Earth? Answer: such conditions are created here that we can exist in this world, on this planet, in our egoism, which sets us, these bodily conditions. However, this is created artificially so that we could quickly change ourselves and prepare for a state above the Earth's conditions. Then we can move as we please, anywhere. When we exit the boundaries of egoism, we begin to see a different universe. These planetary and stellar conditions no longer exist there. There are forces there. Matter does not matter at all. We do not see the matter, we just see a field of egoistic and altruistic forces. And it already depends on how much we begin to interact between them. We then build our universe, the one called spiritual, because it is already built above egoism, on altruism, and we begin to build it ourselves. Question: what does an ordinary person feel if he is in these forces? Answer: he feels that he is already living in a system of spiritual, altruistic forces, not egoistic ones. That is, he has a completely different direction of mind, thoughts, feelings, and relationships, toward another, toward one's neighbor. Based on this, he already sees completely different states of matter. All this will come. Why do we want to relocate egoists somewhere to another planet? What are they going to do there? They will make a mess of Mars. All this has neither the possibility nor the right to exist. Question: do you think it is better to invest all this money in education, in re-educating people, in correcting them? Answer: undoubtedly. This is our goal, it should be our goal, the re-education of humanity and the creation of a completely new, spiritual humanity from it. Humanity the way it is today has no future. We see this more and more clearly from day to day. From CAB TV's News with Dr. Michael Leitman, January 11, 2021. New Life 1295. Deepening the ties in the groups to which we belong.
Shalom lachem, toda shetem.
Hello, and thanks for joining us on the New Life Show with Dr. Michael Leitman. Hello, Dr. Leitman. Hello, everyone. Hello, Yael Shabarel. Hello. And today we'd like to talk to Dr. Leitman about leading a group to connection. Around each of us, there are people at home, at work, relatives, friends, people that we share the same hobby with, and so on. We'd like to understand, how can we advance the spirit of good connection between people on our way to a better world? Be with us. So, we're on our course, as always, where we meet people that came to study the integral method. The world's becoming more and more interconnected. We are more and more interconnected, and we actually understand that the more we advance the spirit of connection and integrality, the more we'll be able to succeed and to adjust ourselves to the frequency of the new world. And our participants, they're a part of different groups, sports clubs, friends. They're a part of a team at work, they're a part of a family, they're a part of many different kinds of frameworks. And today we'd like to take a study case of a friend of ours who is a cyclist. Every Friday for 2 years already, they go cycling together as a group. They have lots of fun doing it, but like in every group, there are tensions from time to time. And, you know, everyone decides to do something to do together and someone wants to do something else or someone participates less. It happens in the different circles in our life. And we would like for you to teach our participant how can he, in his group, in the group that he's a part of, how can he increase the force of connection, the spirit of connection, according to the integral laws as we know them. And the question is, how do you think he can contribute to such a group? A group of friends that he doesn't lead, he's not their teacher, he's just a friend like any other friend in the group. There are six. Look, I meet such groups because at least once a week I go to the forest for a walk in the forest. Yeah. And there I meet such cyclists there. I don't see that they have any special kind of connection between them while they're cycling, as I see. And, you know, they're simply riding their bikes. They like it. There has to be a certain goal. Either we see it during the cycling itself, or before, or after, or from that altogether on a different level of their connection, that they want to connect between them, and this entire journey that they're doing, it's just a means to reach a connection. Suppose we take one of these groups. Usually, it's not by chance that you said that you meet such groups regularly. Nowadays, many people go hiking, cycling, and they have their guys, the guys with whom they ride a bike together. Usually it's on Fridays because they don't work. There are those that like doing it on Saturday. But there's an entire world around it that you eventually see them on some road. It's only the outcome, the result. But you have to prepare this, make food. It's an entire operation. Now, if you ask each one of them, he has work and so on and so forth. This he has to, but what he likes is riding a bike with his guys. What is their goal? For them to have fun together. Now, one of them came to our course, How to Better Manage Himself in the New World. He's studying with us for 3 or 4 months. He understands that we're advancing, the world's developing, evolution, connection. He already became really smart. But he goes, he continues meeting his friends every Friday. They're not studying yet. He is. Now, suppose my name is Gil, and I'm a part of such a group. You taught me in the past 3 months different nice things. Now, when I'm with my guys that I cycle with, what do I have to keep in mind? What's my goal? What should I do so that the spirit and idea of connection will spread in that group? Do you want for that to act that way between them? Yeah, for the spirit of connection to work a bit more between us. Why? Because I feel that it's good, and this is where the world's headed. I've been studying with you for the past 3 months. I understand. The world's headed towards greater connection and so on. I want, you know, just a bit, to instill a bit of this great big idea into that group. What should I keep in mind? First of all, that you're coercing them. I don't understand. Because you're bringing them some kind of opinion, values, that they don't need, maybe. Exactly. Now, I need you to teach me what not to do. And what should I do? Simple do and don't do. I'm just explaining what's my motivation. I feel that the idea of connection is great. I'd like that wherever I am, like in this cycling club or group or team, that they'll feel a bit more connected to. What should I and shouldn't I do? Here we have a dilemma. Either we simply connect, because that will help each and every one of us, will feel pleasant in our group of cyclists, or we need to bring some kind of incentive, higher goal, more exalted. Why? What for? How? What's the reason for our connection? Meaning a connection between us, for it to also take on a special character. I don't know how to approach this if you're asking me. I maybe need to talk to them directly. Great, so my name is Gil. I'm with my guys. We're 6 all together. I'm one of them. You can talk to me openly because I'm familiar with these ideas. I've been studying with you for the past few months. And really, it touches my heart, and I would really like to that to permeate the different circles of my life. I chose the guys that I cycle with, but I'd like for it to become part of my family and my workplace. I really want it. So one tiny step. I'm afraid that if I'll explain to them where I am and some other group, you mean this course, yeah, that they won't want to connect to me anymore because I have another group, and it's like betrayal. No, no, it's not betrayal or anything, but maybe I'll appear as a philosopher who came to So our first question, the first question that I'd like to ask from this point of view is, what do I have to keep in mind as this good future picture that I'd like to advance this group toward? The good picture is for them to want that same goal that it's possible to achieve through the method that I'm learning now from this course that I'm on. That if they'll want it, that I'll be able to bring them to it happily. And this goal being what? Inner connection between people, so much that they discover the essence of connection. That between us there is such a connection that we can call it even love, mutual support, mutual understanding. That we become as one man and one heart, as it says. Okay, this is the picture that I have to keep in mind all the time? Yes. If I want for that to happen, then I have to talk to them gradually, bit by bit, and to bring them this group of cyclists. These kinds of exercises. What's the first exercise? For us to talk about the importance of connection. And what is that exactly? The importance of connection, meaning that to the measure to which we connect between us, our cycling starts taking on a new characteristic. We start feeling that we're like one man riding one bike, that we're not even riding. We're floating in the air, hovering. That's beautiful.
Good.
How do I do it practically when I meet them next Friday? We meet next Friday. They didn't invite a lecturer. I'm their friend. We're riding together. We've been riding together for the past 2 years. How do I introduce this picture we just talked about, this idea? Maybe I'll tell them that I feel some kind of drive for a more meaningful connection between us. And then, bit by bit, it's not all at once, I tell them that if we will feel a tighter connection, then we will feel results from our weekly bike riding much more than we do now, and each of us will be able to add, to supplement the others with his own point of view, expressions, vision, worldview, and this is a great asset to each of us. Usually, we stop someplace in some beautiful place, and we start making coffee, and we talk, and, you know, before the end, before we have a big meal, but, you know, refreshments on the way. We make coffee, sit, drink. Now, it's a kind of intimate moment. We're on a break, having coffee. Now, I'm Gil. My name's Gil. I want these beautiful things you talked about. What do I say? How do I start? There's six of us. That I feel that today, between us, there's a new kind of connection. New kind, meaning that I have a feeling that we feel a bit closer to each other, and we better understand each other, and what happens with each and every one of us, what's going on with each of us, and the way each of us feels this bike ride, I also feel it on you, you know, to soften the hearts. Okay, I said that, and that's it. You have to hear their response. And okay, the guys say, yeah, it's probably from that course you're taking. immediately they push me into a corner. No, it's not a corner. They know that I'm studying and developing, and it's fine. I wanted to say that to tell them that I feel that the connection is special, I have to really feel it, or could I just say it? I mean, once you have to feel that you really feel something special, otherwise, why didn't you talk about it before? So I have to find a suitable situation. Yes. Okay. Now I'm asking them, guys, say, how do you feel in regard to that? No. I don't have to forcefully get a response out of them. But the way they respond, very freely, I said that, and that's that. You're as if throwing it into the air. Yeah. Okay, now, without pressure, without coercion, like you said, what should I not do? I'm just passing my impression from our trip onto them, from our connection too. Yeah, that the result of our trip is the feeling of our connection, which is really pleasant. And what do you expect their response to be? That they'll say that they also feel something special. So it's to open the heart, to create some kind of situation where everyone opens their heart, this is the direction. And then I was the first to open my heart, and I opened the path for them too, for everyone to explain what they feel and what now. And from here, we'll see. I don't know what they'll say. Suppose they'll say, yeah, we also feel that there's room to add our connection to this. This is what I'm waiting for? Yes. That our trip, our weekly ride, can really get a completely new characteristic, meaning if we'll feel more connected between us. Also, the meal that's waiting for us at the end of the ride, and also how we'll prepare ourselves for this ride, everything will be on a new level. When I see that this is what we came to, that I feel that there is a desire and that we can add to our connection, what's the next stage? If I feel that everyone has kind of a desire to add some more to our connection, how can I lead them forward? Then I can tell them, if they'll say, that's what you're studying on your course, then I'll say, yeah, this is what I'm studying on my course. And that wherever we are, a few friends together, wherever there are a few friends together, a few people together, we can add to our connection the essence of the connection, and then our life, the outcome from our common work, from the ride, from everything, the result will be much greater and better. And then they ask him, what? Because it's intriguing. There's something that you can add, that you can get from him. Yeah, like, what do we want to get from this trip? All in all, we're working out, and besides, it feels good to be connected this way, and we support each other. So we can support and connect much more than before, and then our result from this trip will be much more intense. What I understand is that he opens some small opening, and through this small opening, he's trying to increase the connection between them in order to derive greater pleasure from our connection. This is what I learned from this course. They really appreciate this course. Each of them, you know, brings whatever they study into this group, and everyone accepts it. They respect this course, naturally. Right? Can he start explaining different things from the course, or it's too much? I don't think that at once, but, you know, bit by bit. Wherever we sit, talk, enjoy something. You know, there's a lot of chit-chat. And into that, I can also bring several things. Why? Because, first of all, I want to explain to them how can we better enjoy a ride. When people do something together, even if it's something fun, from time to time, there are collisions, disputes, you know, there's the lazy guy. So you have an even better opportunity to introduce the method of connection. So when there is some kind of problem between two friends, for example, I explain to them, why are we in collision? What is our nature? How we live? That it's a result of the world that we live in. Look what's going on around us. And how should we give ourselves a little example of how we can bridge the gaps between us, frictions, disputes, and bring us to a state where we will even more feel how our connection above the different collisions and frictions can be even more powerful. Look, everyone's sitting at 6 a.m. We're preparing the equipment. We got up even at 4:30. We decided that at 6 a.m. we meet in the forest. We wait. Only at 6:30, one of the friends is coming. Now, during these 30 minutes, everyone's sitting and are really angry with that person that they have to wait for him every time. What can he say, even in that situation? We don't even begin the day. That he's very happy that he's late. And he gave them an opportunity to talk about the meaning, the essence of our connection. Okay, this is if he's the one who's late, but the one that's sitting together with them from our course. Yeah, he has to tell them, guys, we have to understand that this is our opportunity to talk about how can we turn this waiting into something that's valuable. How? That we'll talk about the essence, the meaning of our connection, how we have to rise above our ego to concede to that friend. Why? He's late for the 10th time already. But we want for him to be with us. Yeah, he's a part of the group, but enough already with being late. We have no choice. Either you say that this is how we accept him, and by that we connect even more, or you have to turn to the upper force that gives you this exercise, one of the two. So it's always necessary to concede, always. Yeah. But how much can you concede already? Endlessly. This entire concession doesn't come from him, but from the Creator. And this entire concession helps you more to concede and connect. Okay, so if you can explain, this person that's constantly, we're all the time wasting time because of them, it's irritating. How does that advance us toward what? Connection. Finally, we'll decide that that's it. We don't want you anymore. You're driving us crazy. Yeah, you won't wait for him. You'll simply go. Yeah, he can find us. We thought about this several times. The friends are saying, look, he's a good guy, but we're fed up with him being late all the time. You're saying, no, that could advance and this and that. So what do? How do you look at it? We need to understand that all these exercises don't come by chance, but that this is how nature is managing us in order for us to connect despite all of these disturbances that come. What does it mean to connect despite the disturbances? That will wait, and that will use this time as an opportunity to be more connected. You said several times something I want for you to explain. We have the opportunity to enjoy our connection, talk about the essence of our connection. What is that? For us to feel that we're really close, one heart, one mind, one man, one bicycle, and this is how we all ride. Where are we riding on this one bicycle? Toward such a beautiful connection that in the connection we discover that we're really in nature, in harmony. Everyone has, there's room for each of our friends. Everyone's swallowing there in the harmony. What do we play there? What do we play? You want a tune? No. What happens there? A tune of love, a love song is playing. Last question. Can every person lead the people around them toward connection? Anyone. Anyone can add to connection. It's not only for smart people. No, it has nothing to do with wisdom. What is there then? What is it then? Only the willingness to better enjoy life through our connection. Yeah? Final tip. What do you offer that person that reaches that group? What approach should we come to? By instilling this idea of connection into the group, and the group accepts this idea and wants to realize it, then, by that, he increases the connection between people, and then really, he has a very special outcome, which is what? Connection between everyone, a feeling of good, happiness, and a special trip. They'll go home for sure, filled with impressions. Dr. Lightman, thank you very much. Thank you, Yael. Till next time, all the best.
Michael Lateman, on Quora, what is peace? In Hebrew, the word for peace, shalom, comes from the word for wholeness and perfection, shlemut. This implies that if we want to achieve wholeness and perfection, we have to get there via peace. Peace could thus include the understanding of our past and our current state, as well as truces and various agreements, but what we are most certain about is our final destination, that we would like to progress toward a perfect and whole state. A perfect and whole state is one where various opposites complement and complete each other. As such, contrary to what is often thought about peace, it is impossible that there would be peace without war, and we should not focus on trying to bring about peace by convincing or forcing others to think like us, because it will not happen. A state of complementary wholeness and perfection exists in no person individually, but it comes about when we each detach from our individual selves and create a new entity in our positive connections to each other above our egos. Peace is thus a long process involving education so that each of us can detach from our current states and reach a state where we are together, where we need to adhere to the new perfect and whole state that we build above, and disconnected from, ourselves, and where we are all connected as one. In order to reach such a state, we need to draw the positive force of nature into our attitudes and relations to each other, in order to make peace between us, so that it will start helping us operate against our egos. This process takes place without suppressing or erasing our egos. On the contrary, together with our egos, nature's positive force will transform us into beings that have a tendency to love and bestow to one another above the divisive human ego. In other words, we draw the positive force of nature to envelop and cover our egos with its coating of love, bestowal and connection, and it will grant us the ability to behave correctly and reach a state of peace. Written, edited by students of Kabbalist Dr. Michael Leitman. At the degree of prophecy. Prophecy is a state when a person rises above the degree he is at and wants to raise to the next degree, but he has not yet reached it and he simply sees the future. That is, it is also a dream, but on a higher level when a person can see many degrees ahead. The period of the prophecy was about 2,500 to 3,000 years ago. All the prophets predicted what will happen starting from our days and onward because we are the first generation that begins implementing the spiritual mechanics in practice. Therefore, they talked about how we will implement it on ourselves, how we will advance. Until now, the process of human development happened automatically. However, starting from our time, we incorporate free will in order to gradually realize the prophetic degrees. From Cab TV's The Power of the Book of Zohar No. 5. Michael Leitman, on Quora, what is the first step in terms of enlightenment? As a background, the study of the wisdom of Kabbalah is a research of our spiritual enlightenment all the way to full spiritual attainment. It explores our thoughts, desires and the reality we attain in our senses. Below spiritual attainment, we also undergo degrees of attainment in our world. During our spiritual preparation period in this world, we start learning and understanding the connections between spiritual objects. However, such understanding is incomparable to the sensation of spiritual attainment. Kabbalists name spiritual degrees after having attained them. If we only partially attain a degree, it is considered that we are its son, which is why we are called Beni Adam, the sons of Adam, which in Hebrew is the term for human beings, since we are all parts of the degree called Adam, and our goal is to fully attain that degree, the root of our soul. When we rise to a spiritual degree, we feel what transpires in it, attain its qualities, and perceive and sense the Creator according to that degree. With further spiritual ascent, what we perceived in the previous degrees will also change. It is important to understand that only our perception and sensation changes in this entire process. It is not that each of the 125 spiritual degrees are each playing a different film. However, there is a simple upper light that fills reality, and by attaining certain spiritual qualities, we feel part of that light, which we call a world. We can also feel a tiny part of that light in our inborn egoistic qualities, and we call it this world or our world. From the level of our world, our spiritual awakening takes place when we receive, as is written, the posterior of the holy soul, meaning the final and lowest degree of the soul, referred to as a point. This point becomes inserted into our hearts, that is, into our desire to receive, or in other words, amid the human ego. Without the point in the heart, we would remain as animals. That is, our desires would not aspire outside our world. The point in the heart, that is, the beginning of spirituality, is the initial spiritual awakening we get to potentially elevate us above the animate degree into spirituality. The process of growing the point in the heart through which we attain spirituality is called the process of building what Kabbalah calls a spiritual partsuf. All of our spiritual attainments take place in this partsuf. We can identify whether we have a point in the heart if we find ourselves asking about the meaning and purpose of life. Why is there suffering in the world? What is reality? Where are we from? Where are we now? And where are we headed, who are we, and other related existential questions. The wisdom of Kabbalah was made in order to answer these questions by providing us with a method for spiritual attainment, where we receive the answers as a clear perception and sensation of the spiritual reality in a series of stages. Written, edited by students of Kabbalist Dr. Michael Leitman. The influence of Kabbalistic books. Question: what influence do Kabbalistic books have on us? Answer: a positive influence. First, they tell a person what one lives in, what is happening in it, why this world is spinning around us, and what influence we can have on it. We begin to understand how we can change the world and our existence in it with the help of certain actions, how much the laws of nature are adapted for us to use them, and to what extent people can adapt themselves to the correct application of these laws. In general, Kabbalah is the science of the correct connection of man with nature. Question: does a person feel this influence on himself? Answer: Kabbalah leads one precisely to a sensory and rational perception so that with the help of both mind and feelings a person would correctly direct the influence on changing his nature. Is it possible to feel this through a book? Answer: not just to feel. The book guides him, explains how to do it. The correct application of Kabbalah should change a person's entire destiny. Question: if he knew that, he would probably only read these books, right? Answer: yes. However, here everything depends on the strength of the desire. It is not like you pick up a book, open it, and suddenly, like in Harry Potter, everything changes and lights up. Number yet, if a person desires, then by changing himself, he changes the influence of the surrounding world on himself. From CabTV's questions about Kabbalistic books, October 22, 2019. The path to absolute freedom. Question: does man remain free by acquiring the nature of the Creator? It is written that he becomes a slave of the Creator. Answer: this is written to show us to what extent we enter a different state. By acquiring the property of bestowal and love, the property of mutual connection with each other, through this property of absolute mutual support, connection, and obligations, we sign a completely different social contract: love your neighbor as yourself. Everyone must achieve this state. By doing it, we begin to feel absolute freedom. It seems a paradox: by choosing the principle of not being free, man enters absolute freedom. Our egoism is purposely created in such a way that it pushes us to the necessity to reach connection with others so that we in practice love our neighbor. Man is not free, and the evil inclination is his nature. The only free choice that he has from the point of view of Kabbalah is to grasp this and to want to rise above his nature, which is identical to the attainment of the Creator. From CabTV's Spiritual States, April 29, 2019.